Welcome into Locked On Knicks. We are picking up where we left off yesterday. More from Jonathan Macri of Knicks Film School. And we're not quite done talking about Tom Thibodeau yet.
Yeah, we're finishing up the discussion talking about how the favorite for the Knicks coaching job could potentially be successful. Macri's actually pretty high on him. I would say I guess higher than many people on him. And then, Gavin, you've been on the record as not being super high on Tibbs. And so we have kind of a discussion about how he could potentially be successful. What we're anticipating things will be like, under the Leon Rose regime with Tibbs as head coach and things of that nature. And then finish up with a little NBA bubble talk and, talk about the funny parts of it, the concerning parts of it, everything that's kind of come up in this last week or so since the bubble opened and started accepting NBA players into it. So we'll finish up with that and just a little funny talk. So that is coming up next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
This is all rebound, back up off the glass. It's good. RJ brings the Knicks to the
rim. What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam across the lane. Knox foul from behind. Count it and one to Trier. Trier drives down.
I think one thing that has helped me talk myself into Tibbs a little bit is he definitely needs a certain we've gathered this. I mean, we talked to Sean Hyken a couple weeks ago, who covered him, when he was with the Bulls, and then talked to Kane, or no, sorry, Kane was Milwaukee. Gavin, I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head. The Locked On Wolves host.
Ben, I forgot.
Ben Beacon. I'm sorry. Yeah.
There you go.
Almost forgot his name. We talked to Ben Beacon from Locked On Wolves, and he had given us his sort of take on Tibbs' time in Minnesota, and I think that Tibbs needs a certain type of player, and I think that the Knicks have, at least in the younger guys, a number of guys that fit a Tibbs sort of mold. Like, I think RJ works his ass off, cares on both sides of the ball. He just wants to win. Like, I think it was pretty evident this season that he wants to win. He wants to be a focal point, I think, to a degree, like, especially more than he was this year. All those frantic waving in the corner, watching Julius Randle, quote unquote, go to work. All those different times you could see that RJ wants to be a bigger part of what's going on. And I think the Tibbs would definitely empower him because he is a player that tries on both sides of the ball. Frank Ntilikina, obviously, fits the mold of a Tibbs type of guy that's defense first and, savvy on offense. Mitchell Robinson, super hard worker on defense. He'd be inheriting Taj Gibson potentially, who, even if the Knicks decline his option, I think would probably re-sign with the Knicks just to play for Tibbs again. If you run into some of the problem area guys, the beautiful thing I think about the situation that the Knicks are in right now, where everything is sort of clean slated, is that there's no attachments. So it's not like this coaching search is being conducted by Mills and Perry, who invested a ton into Julius Randle just last summer, and like their reputations are sort of on the line by how Julius Randle works out. Like, if Julius Randle doesn't buy in and Tibbs says I hate him, then the Knicks can trade him for a bag of chips and nobody's going to say anything, because they're going to be like, well, he didn't fit with Tibbs and he wasn't Leon Rose's player, so he's absolved of this. Like, there's that grace period whenever you get a new GM in, or Pobo, whatever, where nothing is their fault for a little bit. And, Rose probably knows that. And, he'll be able to take advantage of that, where if there are certain players that they bring in this handpicked coach in Tibbs and say, adapt to him or get out. And, if guys don't adapt and they ship them off for basically nothing, do like the Phil Jackson, J.R. Smith Shumpert for Lance Thomas, which was probably the greatest move in Knicks history to you, Macri, but was just that, okay, but you know, something like that.
It's a horrible trade. I will say that.
Yeah, but if something like that happens again, you know, then you can say, I actually don't think it was like the worst thing in the world. I think that they just were beyond. They were like over being Knicks at that point. And I think
he sold low every chance he got, and it was. We were all in favor of it because they were like, great, you know, but that's not how you're supposed to run a basketball team. So.
Yeah, exactly. But at any rate, I think Leon could get away with, you know, trading like a Julius Randle or pretty much anyone, you know. I mean, I think that he would catch some flack if one day he just decided to be like, well, this RJ Barrett thing isn't working out and just like trades RJ for nothing. But, you know, I think that he's going to have free reign to construct a roster for Tibbs that is going to fit the type of players that Tibbs wants. And yeah, I think that'll be very valuable to
you know. You know, I agree. And just one other thing I want to add very quickly, you know, adding to what we mentioned earlier about what Ian said about the coach, continuing again, thanks to JB for tweeting this out. On the radio interview, Ian Begley noted that the Knicks are likely to have a very heavy veteran presence on the roster. And he didn't think they're going to, you know, have a bunch of 19, 20, and 21-year-olds in the rotation. Those are Begley's words, which I think is something that a lot of us, I know I have posited, you know, over the last several months, ever since they, you know, hired Leon Rose. And it's kind of like, you know, you could see it very early. This was not going to be some kind of a five-year rebuild. They'll still have RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson and like this year's draft pick, those big pieces. But so when you think about that, and then I forget where I read it, and I'm apologizing to whoever wrote this, but somebody reported that in the coaching interviews, the coaching candidates were being asked a lot about how they plan to use the current roster, which on one hand, that might seem like, okay, obviously, duh, what else are they going to ask about? But you know, that's different than like, where do you see this in 2 years or 3 years? Or like, what are the philosophies? Like, no, this is about getting this thing to look as good as possible right now. And I'm not saying that means they're going to sacrifice, you know, they're going to do something stupid and like trade for Chris Paul or whatever. But I think it's very clear that they want to make this like a good looking product soon, with the thinking that if they do that, then they'll be able to take advantage of what Mills and Perry were not able to take advantage of a year ago. And the fact that it's New York, and that if it's New York and it's a half decent product, well, you know, maybe they'll make me eat my words with Giannis. Who knows? But from that perspective, Tibbs makes a lot of sense, because you look at where he's gone and how quickly he turns things around. So.
Yeah, the big thing for me, and I actually talked about this with your co-host Macri, Jeremy, the other day, was as long as they just need to get a shitload of shooting, for lack of a better term, like whether that's Gallo, whether it's Davis Bertans, whether it's Joe Harris. I mean, ideally, it would even be two of those guys, potentially. Heck, even if it's Melo, I think to compensate for some of Tibbs' inclinations on offense, you need to have a roster that, if not in spirit, is devoted to modern NBA basketball, in terms of infrastructure, is. And I think that'll sort of at least promote Tibbs to like the best possible tendencies and like the healthiest possible tendencies for, I mean, one, being as good as possible next year, which is nominally what they want. And two, this is also what we got into. And we got into this with Jack Huntley two podcasts ago, making RJ Barrett and Mitchell Robinson look as good as possible and turning them into the best possible trade assets. So I think everything starts with shooting for the Knicks, both in terms of being good, in terms of allowing their young guys to develop, and just aesthetically. I can't watch another year of Julius Randle barreling into four or five dudes, and that's sort of like my like worst Tom Thibodeau nightmare, where I would just wake up shaking is another year of that. And
but I mean, what about Tibbs's previous resume implies that he would do that?
Like, I just say it was a lot of his offense, and again, like it's hard to gauge. Like, I think a lot of this was personnel based, but both in Chicago and Minnesota, like they were never really, or at least as far as I remember, they weren't particularly plus three-point shooting teams. And I just remember those Bulls teams would always really bog down the playoffs. And it would work because Derrick Rose at his peak could go through three or four guys and still finish and be efficient. And Joakim Noah was, I mean, for a short stretch, like the best or second best passing big man in the NBA. So they made close-knit basketball work and occasionally look like actually like pretty pleasing. But his rosters were never and again, it's hard to separate like how much of this is Tom Thibodeau being anti three-point shooting and how much of it is the fact like, look, he just didn't really have a ton of shooters in either of those stops. But it never really resembled anything close to modern basketball. And again, it's just hard for me to tell like whether that's his ideology or those were just the rosters he had. But to make that a little clearer for him, my point is just have as much shooting as humanly possible.
The other thing to consider, you know, the day Leon Rose got the job, you don't think Tom started watching film of RJ and Mitch and all these guys like pretty quickly after that, you know? And
I get the feeling that Tom Thibodeau has a League Pass subscription and watches literally every single game with a notebook in his hands at all times.
I could see it.
I mean,
he's obsessed.
I think Schwinn told me that there was some article written about him at some point where he was like interviewed and was like, oh, there's no like lady in your life or anything. Like you never wanted to like start a family. And he was literally like, the day that I chose to work in basketball, I decided I was never going to have a family.
And it was funny. Vork earlier today retweeted an old article from, I think, 2002, which talked about Tibbs as like an up and coming head coaching candidate. And it's there was a sentence in the article that literally just read, he is not married. He remains not married because he's married to basketball. But like, look, that's, you know, for all the jokes, you know, and everything, like, isn't that what you want? Don't you want a guy who's obsessed with trying to be the best coach he could be?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's admirable. I mean, some of the other best coaching minds, like in other sports, some of them have managed to balance that and others have been maniacs. You know, it's kind of like it's like one or the other. Like they're either well adjusted or they're like complete and total maniacs. Like Popovich seemed pretty well adjusted, you know, like
him and Steve Kerr, I think.
Kerr seems like he, you know, is always valued off the court stuff. Even like, I mean, if you go like other sports, like Bill Belichick, like he has a wife and seems to have some life outside of football, although apparently he during the season is inaccessible.
He's very funny. That's the only thing I know about Bill.
Yeah. He's funny, but also I hate him. But that's another topic for another day. Just because he's a Patriot. I don't know. I feel like that was pretty good about the coaching. I did want to talk about the bubble, too, a little bit. I feel like there's a lot coming out about the bubble.
Yeah,
I don't know. I just like getting other perspectives. Like, Macri, what do you think about this so far? Like, I was a little concerned today. There was that tweet that came out that said, on the July 7th testing, which I guess I was confused about whether this was the entry testing or if this was after everybody had already been admitted and they're doing routine tests. But they said two players tested positive, like, at the bubble. And I'm like, well, that's a problem, unless that was on entrance. But even then, you know, if they, I don't know, I assume they're handling everything right to a degree, which maybe is assuming a bit much, but it was a little concerning to me where I'm like, we better not see anything about, you know, like the next round of testing, like, oh, 3-4 positives. Cause these guys are clearly, once they're in the bubble, they're doing shit together, like seeing people fishing and crushing beers by the pool together and all this other stuff. Like there's not a lot of social distancing going on. By and large, it doesn't seem like,
I mean, you know, NBA players are people too.
I mean, I don't blame them to that degree. Like, they're all there together. What else are they going to do but do stuff together? But they're not cyborgs other than Kawhi Leonard, you know? So,
yeah, you know what? I don't really have, we opened the show talking about having a take. I don't really have any takes on the bubble just because there's, you know, and I'm sorry if this is like, will like come off as offensive to anybody, but there's a certain amount of money at stake in an endeavor, like, you, and I don't think people quite have a full, some, not you guys, but I don't think some people have a full grasp of just how much money is at stake for the league, not only this season, but like the trickle down effect that would happen if they had canceled the year. Like, this was always going to happen. Like it, like just that this was always going to happen. I don't know how else to put it. And it's just, once that fact was established, it just becomes a matter of making it happen as seamlessly as possible and making it as, you know, and I think by all indications, they've tried to do that. And it's like, now it's like, well, you know, whatever happens, happens. Hopefully, I mean, I hope it goes well and it's, there's no, you know, my big fear is like, you know, the legitimacy of this year's title will be tainted because of some, you know, like Giannis comes down with this thing in like game one of the finals or something like that. That would suck. But yeah, that's my only thought.
Yeah, we've talked about it in various forms, so I won't go too long on this. But what still scares me, and I thought it was interesting that Baxter Holmes at ESPN actually wrote an article about this, are still just like the lack of like knowledge, understandably, we have about like the long term implications of having COVID, and even in cases that are minor or asymptomatic, people still potentially showing long term lung damage, long term heart damage, and I mean, for a professional athlete, that's game over. That's your career. And even if it ends up being one, like, I'm sure like the numbers on that are presumably low, but if it ends up being one guy, was this whole thing worth it? And I mean, that combined with still like Alvin Gentry and Greg Popovich being allowed in, Mike D'Antoni and all these older coaches. And I know what they said, they got health screenings and apparently they're not, I guess for their age group, presumably they're particularly healthy and not exceptionally at risk relative to other 70-year-olds, but anyone of that age is at pretty high risk. So this whole thing,
aren't those individual decisions?
Yeah, of course. And ultimately, that's sort of my point, is that these guys know, and I do to some degree buy the argument that a lot of the players were meeting up with other people and playing anyways. And obviously we heard it throughout, and we probably don't even know how many players had it, but a bunch of these guys, I mean, Russell Westbrook just came out and says he currently has it, had gotten sick or were going to get sick anyways. And maybe the bubble for the players at least is legitimately safer. And I mean, to your point, it is ultimately, obviously Greg Popovich is a very smart guy capable of making his own decisions and he wants to be there. But I don't know how the NBA like looks itself in the mirror if someone does die because of this. And I don't think that's likely, but you can't rule it out. I don't know.
I don't think I don't think you could rule anything out, but you know, this is a conversation that could go in a lot of different directions. Cause what I was going to say is that like, ultimately when you are a multi-billion dollar business, you don't get to be a multi-billion dollar business without making compromises that make you feel icky. At the end of the day, and you know, we don't have to get into the whole like China stuff and like with Woj and like that, like, you know, the amount of compromises you need to make along the way to get to the point where the NBA is at are, I think, staggering if we took the time to travel down all of those rabbit holes. And this is just the one that is in the front and center of our consciousness right now. But I don't know from a purely philosophical perspective, does it warrant any more or less critique than any of the other things that the NBA has to like kind of stick in the rearview mirror, so to speak? It's like, again, there's a lot of money at stake. It's curt to say it, and you know, but that's. Yeah, it is what it is.
That's about.
Yeah, I just want to throw out there. Yeah, like I'm not even like necessarily judging the NBA on this front. I'm sort of just freewheeling and I don't know, because I mean, you're right. It's so complicated. And you know, give the NBA full credit in the sense that I think they're doing far better than any other professional sports league in the world.
Yeah. at least as far as the attempt. Yeah. Even though they have the most difficult, it's like they have the highest degree of difficulty to pull this off, but I think they're doing the best job to attempt to pull it off just based off the nature of the fact that they have an indoor sport. that makes it that an indoor sport that requires a lot of flesh on flesh, sweat on sweat, you know, close contact, you know, physical play. It's they have easily the hardest task ahead of them as far as keeping this out of this bubble. But so far, I mean, there was the two quarantines that got issued, you know, over the last few days. Caboclo and Rashawn Holmes both got, you know, sentenced to their hotel rooms for 10 days.
That Holmes story is just,
it's hilarious. You see his mom tweeted at him, like, saying like, oh, his mom tweeted saying like, if you're going to be leaving that bubble, it better only be for my cooking. Like, don't be leaving the bubble for some like takeout food, you know, whatever. And just like roasted him on Twitter. It was funny.
Did you guys see the girl that said she already got invited into the bubble?
Yeah, I did see that too. I that wouldn't surprise me either. I mean, but
and the first comment was someone was like, oh, I knew it was Donovan Mitchell. And she was just like, I wish
it was Mo Bamba. Yeah. Mo Bamba goes, oh, Donovan Mitchell's, you know, going crazy already. And then he's like, she's like, no, it's not.
And then you saw like, I think Montrezl Harrell was the only NBA player who followed her. And he just woke up from a nap and he's like, why is everyone tweeting at me?
Yeah,
that's right.
What's everybody accusing Trez of now?
Yeah, the third person was really
good. I thought my personal favorite story that has come out is the Athletic piece that dropped today. Stating that the essentially no NBA players showed up to any of the parties that they put on, except for Dwight Howard,
who showed up by himself to the one pool party. Yeah,
like, can you imagine? Like,
that's really good.
God,
honestly, though, I don't know what they were expecting. Like, you're creating this DJ freaking, you know, DJ set at a sausage party by the pool at night at Disney World. Like, I don't know what the NBA is like. Were they expecting all the players to just be down there, like, having a grand old time? Like,
it's like the parents who, like, you know, they have like a high school age child. And like, you know, like, I don't know, junior or senior or something that like, hey, let's throw a party for all your friends. Like, did you ever have one of the like a friend whose parents were like, hey, why don't we throw a big party and like no one will show up because like you have better shit to do? Yeah,
where they think that they can like control the like controllable high school parties by being like, oh, it's cool, we'll sponsor it, but like we'll be there, like we'll make food for you guys, it'll be great, it'll be way better than if we didn't make food for you and stay there, right? Like, yeah. I never had to deal with the embarrassment of that, but I know of those sort of engagements. Yeah, and it does feel a lot like that. You know what? That brings me to one more topic too. This is a lighthearted topic after a lot of heavy bubble talk. What do we think of the critiques of the food in the bubble? I actually think it looks all right for mass-produced like resort food that's being delivered in, you know, little styrofoam containers and all that. Like, I think it looks pretty solid. Like, I'd eat the food. I don't know. I think they're being babies. And Rajon Rondo is saying his room looks like a Motel 6 when it looks they're in like the highest class Disney resort, and it looked very similar to a 5-star hotel I've stayed in New York before. Like, I don't think I buy this whole thing that they're, you know, in a destitute situation here where like they're getting served crap food and staying in shit hotel rooms.
I mean, I'm the wrong person to ask. I've in the last few days eaten my 3-year-old daughter's leftover macaroni and cheese and her half eaten apple. So I'm probably not the person to ask this question to, but from what I have seen, the food looks perfectly edible. So yeah
I just thought it was funny when Rondo put that thing out and it was like there's just like 8,000 tweets on Twitter of just like, oh, it must be like, I hope someday I can be so rich that I can like look at this hotel and be like, this is a shithole, I would never stay here again. But then my other thing is, I'm like, how could that hotel be any worse than the ones that they would stay at when they're on the road for half the year in the NBA anyway? It's like, they stay at pretty nice hotels, but that was also a nice looking hotel. So I don't get where the disconnect is here, where it's like, I think he just felt like trash and something, but you know, screw him. He broke his thumb, I guess. So
yeah, I mean, I've stayed in some pretty shady hotels.
I've stayed in some real bad hotels, man, like in New York and otherwise. And those hotels look great in Disney. Like,
yeah, I did a you know, a cross country road trip once upon a time where I just pulled into anything I could find. And yeah, you know, they should be appreciative of what they have, I guess, is what, yeah, how I would say it.
Yeah, is what it is. Gavin, what do you think? Would you be able to survive, you think, on your?
Yeah, I think I'd be okay. I don't know. It doesn't seem too bad. I was just gonna say, I like ESPN did an article on this. I've liked just all the content of seeing the players' personality shine through, and all these guys just noting the very weird and specific things that they brought with them. I think it was Wesley Matthews who was talking about the different incense candles that he brought. It's just funny. I like a better, which maybe you should put some in Dwight Howard's room, but it's fun to just get a feel for some of these guys' personalities. And that's the one thing about this that I think is really fun and exciting. I've always thought the NBA is far and away the league with the most charismatic players, and to just have all these guys in one place, just the stories and the sheer insanity that'll come out, especially as we get further along and they start getting a little stir crazy. Just speaking from experience, for someone who lived in a college dorm for years, I feel like the longer you go on and the longer you're inside, just like the weirder shit people get into. So I'm just looking forward to like maybe 3 weeks in some of the crazy stuff that comes out of this.
Yeah, I'm also pumped for the basketball.
It'll be great.
I'll throw that out there. I mean, we are now what, two? No, we're a little
like 4 months away from game, or since we had games.
Yeah, we're 4 months since we've had games, and we're 2 weeks and a few days away from games. So, I'm excited for basketball to be back.
I'm like cautiously optimistic because I'm preparing myself for the possibility that it all comes crashing down within like 5 days, you know, and they just have to completely call it off. But I if they can pull it off, I'm damn well gonna enjoy the basketball, and I'm ready for baseball too. This is probably a hot take, but I'm like more ready for Mets baseball than I am for the NBA coming back at this point. It's like my summer escape, so I'm ready for that to come back too, hopefully. But yeah, all right, I think this is a good note to wrap up on. So John, you want to let everybody know where they can find you and anything you're working on and all that good stuff once more, even though I listed your most illustrious in the history of Locked On Knicks credentials already at the beginning of the show, but just in case you want to go over it again.
Okay. Where can you find me? You can find me on Twitter.
Do you remember your Twitter handle this time? I had to remember it for you once.
I'm going to read it. I'm looking at it right now. It is JC Macri with an M, NBA. So that's on Twitter. And if you go to my Twitter handle, there's a link there to subscribe to the Knicks Film School newsletter, which is a newsletter that is delivered. I have somehow written three of these things a week, or no, I shouldn't say written, because Jeremy was writing like one a week for a bit. But I've been sending out three of these babies a week, even like the whole quarantine, I'm hopefully going to continue that. And it's absolutely free. So subscribe to the Knicks Film School newsletter and host of the Knicks Film School podcast. I think that's... Did I forget anything? I think that's it. Am I working on anything?
You have a new podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting.
And a new podcast.
Yeah. Well, I should put that in my Twitter bio. Yeah, the Hoop Spy. Actually, that's... I don't want to say... I'm not going to say it because I am always a believer that something is going to fall through until it actually happens. But we have a guest coming up this week for so it's me and Adam Taylor. It's a general NBA podcast. And we have booked a guest for this week that I am beyond excited for. So keep an eye out for that. And speaking of which, I've actually booked a guest on my podcast that I am excited for. So, you know what? Look out for podcasts featuring me, Jonathan Macri. this week, and if everything comes together, you'll get a couple of good ones. So yeah,
wow, very humble of you. Good close. I'm kidding. You're actually, I mean, considering you literally, I think I could just see you just reading your credentials off of your own Twitter right there, like in my own head here.
That is literally what I'm doing, and I need to change them to reflect that new podcast. So thank you for the reminder there.
So, yeah, you're very humble most of the time, other than when you just promoted those. But I'm sure they're going to be fantastic. Yes, I'm very much looking forward to listening to them. All right, well, that is it for today. So thank you, John, for coming on. As always, you gave us a good amount of your time, which you always do, and I probably kept you up. I'm sure you're exhausted doing your temporary single parenting, so I'll let you get back to hopefully sleeping.
Thank you, sir.